CSS in JavaScript. They go round and round ad nauseam. Blog posts written, blog posts refuted. Talk around and around on how we should do this. CSS in JavaScript. I guess it's our turn now to talk about it. Tools Day will kick off, we both have our opinions. How should we write our CSS? Should we even be prescriptive? Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about
CSS in JS.
Oh, exciting.
This is a topic that has been ruminating about the web development community for 2 years now, but I feel like it's still something that people are so in disagreement about, and people have not come to terms with any kind of singular solution yet, which is really interesting because it has really been that long.
I feel like people get very, very upset about it. I know, like, I feel like 3 weeks ago, Brad Frost made some like snarky tweet about CSS and JS, and it felt like the dev internet just blew up. People were so upset about this, or in such a big fan.
Definitely was pretty interesting to see how that conversation played out and how divisive it was. And we'll talk about that in a second. Before we get into it too much, I want to say thank you to our sponsors. Today's show sponsor is Datadog. Datadog is a software as a service-based monitoring platform that provides dev and ops teams with a unified view of all of their systems, apps, and services. You'll be a part of thousands of organizations that already rely on Datadog to collect, visualize, and alert them of abnormalities. There are 200-plus turnkey integrations, including AWS, Postgres, Kubernetes, and Slack, all done out of the box with custom metrics to gain full-stack observability with a unified view of all of your apps, systems, and services. They released a new log management service that integrates with the logging systems that you already use. Other key features include real-time visibility from customizable dashboards, algorithmic alerts like anomaly detection, outlier detection, forecasting alerts, end-to-end request tracing to visualize app performance, and real-time collaboration. Datadog is offering listeners a free trial, and as an added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll send you a free t-shirt. Check out their log management service and start a free trial today at datadog.com/toolsday. That's datadog.com/toolsday. So if you go to datadog.com/toolsday and sign up, then you'll get your free t-shirt and you'll get your free dashboard. So again, that's datadog.com/toolsday. Thank you, Datadog.
Excellent.
Okay. Whew. I'm already feeling like ready to go. Talk about right. Before we get too far into it, though, I do want to break down the different types of CSS and JS. And the reason why is because I think that people get hung up on a certain framework or a certain style of CSS and JS. And then like that becomes the basis of all their arguments. CSS and JS is sort of a theory of how to write CSS more so than it is a specific way to do it, because there are so many different solutions. Correct. So I do want to go through that with Chris.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think when it first kicked off, when people said CSS and JS, they thought about inline styles with React, where you could say a style object and you drop it into your div, right? And so you said div style equals this thing. Oh, look, I can add in JavaScript logic into my CSS, generate CSS, and it's great. So that is the roots of CSS and JS, but nobody thinks of that today anymore. That was a way that was horrifically like terrible performance. You kind of clobbered your DOM, and it was just not a good thing. Nowadays, when we talk about CSS and JS, we're talking about one of like five different libraries, which all let you write CSS in JavaScript, but they do eventually compile into a style style sheet or a style block. So you're not
Are you talking about inline styles? And people would be writing their CSS alongside with their components.
Correct. And with no libraries. The libraries today, you may still write your CSS in line with your components, but it will compile out to a style object or a style sheet to bring in with your application. So
yeah,
it doesn't. When we were first talking about it and people were really evangelizing CSS and JS, there was just a lot of like problems with it, many of which don't exist today. Some still do, but to clarify, we're talking about using libraries like Glamorous, like Style Components, like Emotion, like JSS, all these things which you let you write CSS in JavaScript, in a JavaScript file, but do compile down to a CSS file at some point.
Yeah, so let's get started with those because there are so many names floating around. Can you tell me about like Glamorous, for instance? Start with that one. What is Glamorous? How does it differentiate itself from the rest?
Sure. So Glamorous is actually a bad example because it just got deprecated called
something to start with
for something called Emotion. So Emotion.js.
Right.
Now Glamorous was known because there were like two. There's the two kind of competing things. There are style components. So we actually had Glenn Mattern on our show a year and a half ago, and him and Max Stoiber created Style Components, which is a kind of component model for CSS. And so you would essentially say, hey, I want to have a styled h1 tag. In traditional CSS, I would say h1 class name equals my awesome header. And then I would give some attributes to my awesome header called, you know, font size 16 pixels or whatever, right? In the styled components world, you say, I'm going to define a constant called my awesome header. And then use the style components library to define, you say style components.h1. And then in JavaScript, you would have a template string where you would define your CSS attributes to this constant. And then you would reuse that variable across your application.
The component as CSS. You say, this is my const header. Here are all the styles.
Yes.
And then when you use it, you're rendering that constant that you've just set with all the CSS properties and applying that in your JSX or however else you're writing code.
Correct, right. So if you've used like functionless, stateless components in React before, it would look the exact same way as that, basically.
Okay, interesting.
And so in your code, then you only compose together components, and those composed components contain all your styles.
I understood how that was done, but now that I think about it again, it's interesting because like it's a CSS first approach.
Yes, it's interesting. Yeah, so you get to write your CSS first, and then you wrap your JavaScript into it. And Glamorous was like that, except style components had you write your CSS in the traditional CSS syntax. Right, you wrote it. You had a template string in your JavaScript, and then you just wrote CSS like normal. Style components said, hey, we're in JavaScript, so we should write our styles like we were in JavaScript, so that you would have an object and it would camel case the properties, right? So instead of like font dash size, it'd be font camel uppercase size, right? And as if you're running normal JavaScript. So some people really liked that idea where, you know, I'm in JavaScript, I'll write my CSS as if I'm writing JavaScript. And the same kind of syntax. And some people really liked, hey, I'm writing CSS, and despite the fact that I'm in JavaScript, I still want to write it like it was CSS. So that was kind of the big fundamental difference between the two. And then Emotion came along and said, why not both? And so Glamour said, okay, there's no point in my existing anymore. Just use Emotion. So now there's basically Emotion and then Style Components as the two major CSS and JavaScript libraries.
What about like JSS?
Yeah, so you still have a couple other ones like JSS is the other next in line,
Radium,
I guess.
That's one that pops up. Radium. I think this is one that like gets kind of like people are. I'm trying not to curse. SHIT on.
Yeah, so
because
Radium
it is in line.
Yeah, so Radium was really big early on. It was one of the first, like, really big, hey, you know, let's use JavaScript, CSS in our JavaScript. But I think more or less people have migrated off of Radium onto either Style Components or Emotion. It's still used, obviously, but to a much lower degree than the other two.
Yeah. So let's talk about style components. I think that's one that we're definitely starting to see more and more, and also included in like templates. If you're downloading a template, it's pretty mm-hmm. common now that you'll either see style components or any of these systems already in place. And I've seen Radium in place in templates also, which is interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think like the Gatsby template had both just like to show.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about styled components.
Yeah.
What are those? How are they different?
Yeah. So, I mean, style components is a library, right? So you say import styled from style components, and you do that thing where you define your bunch of components, which are actually just style blocks, more or less. And there's not a ton of things to say about it verbally, I guess. We'll link the documentation for style components. They do have really amazing docs, which is one of the things that differentiated it from Glamorous in the first place, where Glamorous had kind of, you know, mad documentation, where style components really walked you through the entire flow. And really, to me at this point, if you choose to use CSS and JS, it's just a workflow choice. Like, you like writing JavaScript and your CSS and your JavaScript, and that's why you're doing it. One of the big benefits of style components is that if you're like distributing a design system or a component library, because it's all JavaScript, if someone imports in your component, they get the styles with it. There's no additional step to it. So that's a really like handy tool for quickly spreading a component library around. And so that's one of the kind of cool things about using these things. If you're using like Sass or CSS, you still have to set up that kind of additional build step. But style components is, you know, it's kind of in the name. Like, it's trying to make you think of styles in a component model. Just like you think of your HTML and component model now in React, styles are the next componentized part of your application.
I think it's a little confusing because there's also CSS modules, which is similar but different from styles components. And they both sound like the same thing. I mean, the naming there is like,
yeah,
we could talk about like branding later, but CSS modules, you're basically just writing CSS and then importing it as an object and then accessing all the styles from that file. And you tend to couple it in the same folder, like you go to React, where you have the index file, and then also you'd have your styles just encapsulated, but still written as CSS. So it feels comfortable to people who are used to writing CSS.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar. It's also, I think Glenn Mattern was the one who wrote CSS modules in the first place, and he's also part of the style components team. So there is a bit of overlap there. The big difference is that in CSS modules, you still use divs, more or less, in your app code, right? So in my application, when I'm consuming a component, I'll use div class name equals styles dot, you know, the class name I defined in my CSS module file. Whereas in style components, you would never use a div. You always use a component as opposed to a div.
I think the difference there is kind of the theory that like web components has, or web components, everything is a customized component and you name it very specifically based on what your use case is.
Yeah.
Whereas CSS modules uses the basic DOM components that HTML gives you.
Yep.
So it doesn't have to be a div. It can be like a form.
Exactly. So in style components, you generally rarely ever use a native HTML component directly. It's always wrapped in styled components. Whereas in CSS modules, you're using those native HTML elements and you're adding a class name to it. But the class name is dynamic based off of style components library generating something off of a CSS file you have imported in.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good clarification. So what are your thoughts in general?
It's funny. So I went through a kind of up and down. So initially, I was really, really against CSS and JavaScript.
I feel like we had the same journey here.
Yeah, I was like, I'm so much slower writing it this way. I used to be able to write my Sass file. I'll drop in a Sass loader for Webpack, and boom, I'm done. It's super quick. I really like establishing a cascade of styles. So, like, you know, some people really hate against, you know, hey, global styles are bad, which I agree. But sometimes I want my typography defined globally. I want my font face defined globally. And I got really irritated that it was really hard to do this in the CSS and JavaScript, you know, world. But now you can do it. So Emotion has a global escape. It's like, hey, you can define your global styles in this, you know, object here and everything else elsewhere. And To be fair, I'm still kind of like straddling the fence. I think it definitely helps some context settings. And one of the big benefits of styled components or emotion or CSS and JavaScript in general is that because you're always tying code directly to the component, it's much easier to go in and remove code, remove CSS, or add new CSS and have a clear idea what it's impacting. Even in my BAMified styles in other applications, inevitably something leaks because I needed to at the time. And it becomes hard to say, okay, I feel comfortable removing this code. So I think that's one good thing about CSS and JavaScript.
I think the best part of it is the performance aspect, where if you, the component that you have applied styles to is not in the viewport, it's not in use at the time, the styles are also not loaded into the DOM. And same thing when that object, that component is in the DOM and removed, then the styles are also removed, which makes it so that you never have global CSS floating in the user's style sheet that's not being used. And that's awesome. Like, I think that in itself is like the core problem people are trying to solve. But I'm with you, right? I don't think global styles are a bad thing if you know how to use them. I spent a lot of my time, like early on in my career, doing CSS architecture and like talking about like file architecture, like how to make sure that things are organized in a way that you don't have any overrides, like the whole IT CSS thing where you have the most broad statements first, and then it gets more specific, where things shouldn't be overriding each other. BEM, like you mentioned, block element modifier, that naming convention, keeping things like really well structured. I think if you keep things really well structured, you don't need CSS and JS, but it does give a lot of benefits to performance. It does give a lot of benefits to composability if you're writing in one specific framework, which happens to React probably, or like React or Vue. The negatives, though, I think like are very valid, where you're basically tying yourself completely to a framework. Whereas in the like olden days, you used to be able to like have a WordPress website and then migrate parts of it into like Rails.
Yeah.
And still have the shared like same shared styles because it was just written in CSS.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so it's one of those things where like also, you know, I used to see a couple of like main things people say, hey, I want to use CSS and JavaScript to A, remove CSS leakage, B, you know, write more modular styles, and then C, something I'm forgetting right now. But most of those are solved by better CSS practices, right? If you write a lot of the downsides of CSS are poorly written CSS affecting everybody. But a lot of the upsides, as you kind of said, is the portability. I think one of the big upsides is that, you know, we have a lot of designers now, you know, will know some HTML and CSS, and it's a shared language you can kind of communicate with. And so while designers, of course, can learn React as well or Vue or whatever, it's additional barrier to entry. And, you know, they have a lot of things else they need to worry about as well. And so I think when you're writing just in CSS, you can communicate a little bit better. And one of the other big things that CSS and JavaScript gives you is this interrupt between JavaScript and CSS, where I can write a variable in JavaScript and like manipulate it and then pass it on to CSS. However, with the kind of prevalence of CSS variables now in most browsers, most modern browsers, that's also kind of taken away because you can define things in JavaScript in custom variables and then just use them in CSS just as you would before.
I think that CSS variables actually were the tipping point for me for using CSS modules versus not.
Yeah.
Because before CSS variables, like it was a completely different landscape. It is amazing how much CSS variables has changed.
Right.
Like I would 100% use a preprocessor in the past because like variables and nesting were basically the two things I needed. I mean, functions, all that stuff was nice.
Yeah.
But they were necessary.
Yeah.
And now you don't need that anymore. So it's made it more possible to write vanilla CSS without the same pain as developers had in the past, which makes it more likely they'll use something like styled components where they can write vanilla CSS and also get the benefits of the like performance aspect of using CSS modules.
Yeah. And CSS variables to me is the one thing that says, hey, you know, at this point to me, CSS and JavaScript is just a workflow problem.
Yeah.
If it matches your workflow, go ahead and use it. If it doesn't, no big deal either way. I do like the idea of making styles a component. Both emotion and style, and style components do this, where, you know, you're literally creating components that are just style blocks, more or less. And it encourages
you to import them. That's cool.
you can export them. You can import them. It encourages you to think about styles in a more compositable way, right? Where things kind of clip together. And you can do that anyways, right? This is not brand new to style components, but it does encourage that mental model.
You can also import global styles. Like if you do need global styles or like typography, then you can have those as individual files and import.
And so in kind of the same way where React did not bring about componentization of JavaScript, it does really encourage it. And so people tend to do it more. And in my mind, style components and emotion both have a kind of same effect where they encourage you to write components for styles. And so you kind of think about styling that way and thereby somehow get, you kind of accidentally step into, you know, CSS best practices because you're thinking that model. But if you already feel super comfortable in CSS and you're already using BAM, you're already, you know, doing everything right, I don't think CSS.js gives anybody extra benefits, basically.
Yeah. I have some like slightly stronger opinions. I feel like when you're using CSS and JS as co-located styles where they exist in the same document, it looks messy. It's hard to read. It's hard to work with. I don't like it. Like, I will say that right now. It does not look good. It doesn't feel good to me as a developer. Like, it just feels like the separation of concerns is being plopped together for the simple reason that you mostly work in JavaScript files. That's awful. Like, I don't like that at all.
I will say that, though, to interrupt, people said that about HTML too first, right? When React first came out, we're like, oh, I hate pairing my HTML and JavaScript next to each other. But then we're like, oh, wait, they're so intertwined anyways. So isn't it nice now? But I do agree with you. When you have a lot of styles on one page, I feel like any component should always have a maximum amount of lines per file. And if you write a bunch of CSS and it, you know, you suddenly have a 1,000-line file, that's terrible. It's just not a good idea.
I get what you're saying about the HTML and JavaScript, like, totally. And I think that a lot of people had the reaction I did, too, initially. But you're never exporting that much HTML per component, like, you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And also, your HTML is all together in one point. Like, you're not often writing functions inside of your HTML, like maybe occasionally, but you should be writing functions outside of it and referencing them in your HTML. So it's cleaner, and people used to write HTML that way anyway, like on click is a thing.
That's true. It's terrible.
So it's not that different, and like it's in the same file, but it's still separated. Whereas if you're writing your styles in the component, it's like very much, you can't even read where you are in the page.
If you add that style, you know, property and then equals the object. Yes, I agree with you with that. I think there's a different philosophy where you export that to the top of your file or the bottom of your file, and you say, I have my class in here, which is my, you know, React component, and then below that I have.
That's fine. That's like the same as having your CSS file next to it.
Yes.
It's there.
Yes.
I don't have a strong opinion on that. Like, I just have a personal smaller preference to have it separate in a CSS file, but like, I don't care about that as much as like seeing the styles within the tag.
Yes. Okay.
Like form.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Other than that, I use CSS modules at work and I really like it. It's nice to use once it's already set up and I don't really have to think about it. It's nice, like, to work with. I like that it creates new class names for everything. So I could have, like, multiple headers where it makes sense to have them. But really, they're exported to unique classes. So, like, I could have a button in a sidebar and it looks different than just button in the header. But they're both called button. Like, you can name things very elementary. You don't have to do this long BEM naming syntax anymore. That's really nice. We kind of talked about this earlier in the show. I do think a lot of the things that are being solved with CSS and JS are solved with good CSS practices. But I do love that we're thinking about components more as a web development community. And we're thinking about everything in terms of components, your HTML, your JavaScript, and your CSS, like, all together, which is great.
So we're basically on the exact same page.
Yeah. We thought we'd have more of a discussion about, like, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. Just kidding. We don't do that. But yeah, I think we had the same journey where at first it was like, oh my gosh, what are people doing? Like, this is awful. And now, because the system allows us, because we have CSS variables, because we have like static components and things like emotion that make more sense.
Yeah.
We're both cool with it.
Yeah. So basically, CSS and JS, we're cool with it.
But that, again, that caveats. Is if you are like hooked into React and never changing your opinion ever.
Yeah.
Which like makes me nervous because that's, of course, not going to happen. Like, there's always going to be something new.
Yeah.
So.
What are you talking about? React is the final thing. There's never going to be another framework.
Never going to be another one, ever. The thing is, I do think that because so many people are writing code this way, the next thing will allow for more portability.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Which is why I'm still writing my CSS in CSS files, even if I'm importing it as an object.
Yep. Concur. Concur.
All right. That's what we've got for our show today. Hope you learned something. I think that was a great overview of CSS and JS and all the different types and tools for that. We're going to have all of those tools in our show notes and a couple of blog posts about some of these tools. I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor again, Datadog. Datadog is a software service based monitoring platform. If you want to check out their service, get a free dashboard and a free t-shirt. That is datadog.com/toolsday. datadog.com/toolsday. Get that t-shirt. Also want to shout out to Webflow for being our patron on Patreon. They have continued to support us. We are so grateful. If you want to support us, you can go on Patreon, pledge some, like, it's like $1, $5, anything is great. We love seeing your support. It's so nice. Also, if you want to support us, like, share the podcast with a friend. Rate it, review it on iTunes or a podcast listener you listen to it on. All these things are how people hear about our show and how we can continue doing what we're doing. So we love you for listening, and we will catch you next time.